Hello, passengers, and welcome aboard the TB Pilot's License with service to Eternia and He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. We ask that you please fasten your headphones, secure your podcasting device, and remember that you must store your power sword in the overhead bin. Space is limited, and we would be happy to gate check your power sword free of charge to your next destination.
Welcome to the TB Pilot's License. My name is He Jeff, joined by He Max. And Max, happy Pride and happy Pride, everyone.
You know how hard it is to get a direct flight to Snake Mountain anymore? And the prices are absurd.
Oh my gosh. Well, Max, this week, as I said in the intro, we are taking a dive, taking a trip to Eternia, and talking about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Right around, you know, if you have not already seen it, the movie that just recently came out. But Max, maybe we have folks here for the first time. Maybe you're a frequent flyer. Maybe you're just a huge He-Man fan. What is this podcast all about?
I know you're the number one Jared Leto fan of the universe.
Oh my God, don't you put that on me. Don't you dare put that on me.
Too late, it's on the record here at TV Pilot's License. We break down and analyze the pilot episodes of some of TV's most famous, or in some cases, infamous shows. We learn more about how these shows came to be and were originally made, if they're effective pilot episodes and making us want to watch more, and if they can be made today. Go back and stream our old episodes from wherever you listen to podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok to see our smiling faces. And if it is your first time flying with us, then welcome aboard.
And before we dive too deep into Eternia and He-Man, a quick word from our sponsors. Well, Max, let's talk a little bit more about He-Man, and we're going to start off with a quick synopsis. The most powerful man in the universe, He-Man, goes against the evil forces of Skeletor to save the planet Eternia and to protect the secrets of Castle Grayskull, which I think we definitely watched in today's pilot. But before we dive too deep into this show, can you tell us a little bit of a history of how it got made?
Today, we're talking about the pilot episode of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe titled Diamond Ray of Disappearance, which originally aired on September 5th, 1983 in syndication. And rather than talking about one creator, we're going to talk about the entire conception of today's show. But before we can talk TV, we need to talk toys.
Hell yeah, brother.
Back in 1976, Mattel passes on the licensing rights to create a line of toys for a movie coming out that summer called Star Wars. The company will spend the next few years attempting to come up with their own line of action figures complete with a mythology, all to unsuccessful results. Their latest attempt at creating a hero out of thin air was presented with three prototypes: an axe-wielding barbarian, a tank-headed soldier, and a helmeted spaceman. The barbarian version would become the foundation of He-Man and is also the center of a lawsuit from the creators of Conan the Barbarian over copyright infringement centered around their deal with Mattel to produce toys promoting the 1982 film with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mattel would eventually win that lawsuit. In 1982, they released the initial toy line Masters of the Universe, notable for using 5.5-inch dolls compared to the 3.75-inch ones used by Kenner's Star Wars and Hasbro's G.I. Joe lines. To accompany the toys and build the characters' lore, Mattel commissioned DC for a series of comic books. However, retail partners felt that requiring a younger audience to read was a big gamble, and the idea of a cartoon series was proposed, as the FCC had recently loosened restrictions on toy-based programming under Ronald Reagan. With help from Michael Halperin, a writer and story editor on The Fall Guy, a complete series Bible is written and the show is pitched to ABC. The network passes, and the show was sold to independent networks to be broadcast in syndication. The show skirted censorship boundaries, allowing He-Man to punch, although he more often than not used wrestling moves and tosses, and limited the amount he could use his sword. Additionally, the show added a moral of the day to the end of each episode to avoid some of the backlash faced by the G.I. Joe series, once again making it personal against Hasbro.
Oh my God, Max, I have a question for you, because this is, as you mentioned, rightfully so, this is a series that was based off of a toy rather than a toy that was based off of a series. Did you ever have or play with the He-Man toys? I know it was a little bit before your time, our time, but
no,
just curious.
This is a franchise that, for me, I know more just through the lens of 80s pop culture.
Yeah.
It was something that was before my time. Of 80s pop culture, I was more Transformers than anything else. That was something that I was gifted, a large box of old Transformers toys when I was very little.
I literally have a Transformers toy on my desk right now.
And then as we progressed into the 90s and more of like our generation and our timeline, I went full Power Rangers as a kid. So to me, I really know He-Man through its big heavy hitter things. I know He-Man, I know Skeletor, I know I have the power and Castle Grayskull. But this is actually my first time ever sitting down and actually watching anything having to do with the series. How about you?
Yeah, for myself, my introduction was being at my aunt and uncle's house and playing with my cousins and playing with their He-Man and She-Ra toys in the 90s, which I know sounds wild, but like being able to play with these toys and like, it seems so silly, but like I very specifically remember loving a Skeletor toy and being like, this is fucking dope. Like, hell yeah, this is the coolest toy in the world, which is like, that's the point of this entire thing is like Mattel was like, oh, we have these really cool looking things and we invested in like the mythology behind them and like having actual backstories about toys. Why not make a movie about it?
I want a Skeletor doll that has bobblehead technology, but just in its jaw.
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think that there's so many opportunities with toys that you're just sort of like, now that we look back at like what toys can be, it's just truly incredible. But let's dive into what journey this show had to do, right? Because the idea of, you already have the toys at home for a lot of these kids. Now let's show you what these toys are like in the world of Eternia. That's going to require a lot of exposition. And boy, brother, do we get it right from the top.
Oh, it jumps out of the gate with like 30 seconds straight of just talking, of just explaining, all right, this is Prince Adam. This is how he became He-Man. No one knows who he is except for these three people. And now we're going to basically just show you a carousel of all the toys you know and love and how they fit into this show.
Not only the toys you know and love, but if you don't have this toy, I'm going to show it to you. And boy, are you going to want it. Are there any of the characters that like based off of this exposition that you were like, wait a minute, that's a pretty cool design. I might want that toy.
I kind of like Triclops because his entire power is just the one or two test from the optometrist.
Yes, Triclops.
I feel like there's a hierarchy to He-Man toys, though. Like, obviously, you want to get a Skeletor or a
sure.
He-Man. I feel like if you had the parents who waited, it could only get you an Orko, though. Like, that's, like, really bottom of the barrel. Like, if you only have an Orko.
If you got an Orko, Master at Arms, like, you're sort of, like, looking at your parents being like, what the fuck happened? Like, was I a bad child this year at Christmas? Like, literally, it's the plot to a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that we will not mention right now. But
we've already talked about Conan the Barbarian from 82. Like, we got to move past Arnold a little bit here.
But, like, I don't know about you, but I got this wild rush of nostalgia when I saw that that Filmation intro card go on the screen. And, like, yeah, we get a shitload of exposition, but also just the animation for this is so different for the time. And was it as striking for you, or maybe what are you thinking with these reduced FCC laws that we're dealing with?
I mean, I think it's a very pretty color palette. They use very like fun, like pastels and things like that throughout it. I love the contrast between Snake Mountain and Eternia. And then, oh, are you talking about the massively ripped cartoon characters that they drew?
Yeah, that was
the
actually
most insane animated quads I've ever seen.
I just, you know, I was looking at this and I was like, there's so much going on in this show. There's a lot of text, subtext, and not so subtle text that is happening with the animation in the show. But it was interesting in my research, this was the first animated series or a character that was allowed to be this muscle bound, which I know sounds like a wild thing, but then you look at the Prince Adam character, right, that were introduced after this exposition, and I just love how much disdain Prince Adam's mom and dad have for him, as if he is like the worst person in the world who also happens to be their very muscle-bound son.
The running joke throughout this of look at our idiot son is so funny to me for this cartoon that obviously we've done a lot of shows where it's the protagonist has a secret. No one can know their other identity. No one can know who they really are. I think this is actually a very common trope in children's shows as well, where it's like, oh, you may feel like a regular person out in the world, but you actually have this power inside of you and you can do all of these things, and whatever the device is. But the way they're just like, this bozo's always late. You broke a hole in the wall, Adam. Or like, where's that? Where's this idiot running off to? We need to save the day. And the disdain is so funny to me.
It's absolutely, I was giggling throughout. And then the idea of, you know, Prince Adam is Hannah Montana-ing his parents, where like, you're telling me there's two of these muscle bound guys just running around in their mind. They're like,
she had the chutzpah to at least put on a wig. This bozo has the audacity to go out there with,
he's taking off clothes.
It's the same hair. I'm like, there's only one person in all of Eternia who has that haircut, who has a haircut that bad, who has the mullet ball that Prince Adam has. It's absolutely absurd. And the fact that there's only three people who know his identity when he's running around with that haircut is absurd to me.
It is interesting, though, as we look at the He-Man character or the Prince Adam character and his surroundings, right? To have the, you know, the kitschiness or, you know, the jokester being Skeletor on the other side. Because seeing He-Man, or we get introduced in this exposition, but the first character that we actually meet in this pilot is Skeletor and his goons. And Skeletor is throwing out some jokes that I was just giggling to this and throughout this pilot.
Absolute barbs from Skeletor. He-Man is goofy. Like, this is a downright silly show. It has a very sassy antagonist in Skeletor. There's obviously the runner of He-Man's parents think he's a bozo. We have this kind of Jabberjaw or Scooby-Doo talking cat who follows Prince Adam around. Don't even get me started on Orko. I hate every time
we're gonna talk about Orko. I'm gonna force you to talk about this floating orb.
But this just feels so silly, and it feels like a direct contrast to the hoorah of G.I. Joe and the seriousness of Transformers that'll come a little bit later, because this just feels like it's such a lighter tone compared to those.
Well, it brings up an interesting conversation, which is the idea of, you know, there is this lighter tone. There are jokes in this animated kid show. Who would have thought? But we have these very masculine looking figures and masculine looking toys in this. And like, let's set the tone a little bit about what else is happening, because it feels like this is the one goofy masculine thing that is going on amongst a bunch of other things, where it's like, fuck you, if you try to be funny you're not masculine. And like, that does bring up an interesting concept right now.
I think, though, so this is just such a piece of 80s pop culture.
Yeah,
when you look back at it, and you have this shift at this point in time where, you know, it's the Ronnie Reagan years, where all of a sudden the masculine and the action shifts into people like Stallone going away from like Rocky One and First Blood into whatever camp the Rocky and Rambo franchises become, Schwarzenegger becoming a massive star, Jean-Claude Van Damme, stuff like WWF really hitting its peak, American Gladiators, and there's hyper-masculinity. There's this new obsession with what, like, the peak male form
sure.
is. And there's also a split, I think, between the super, super seriousness of some of that 80s action, but also having things like Rocky's talking housekeeper robot in some of the later
yes.
sequels, and the characters and showmanship of professional wrestling, and the one-liners of American Gladiators, a show that we talked about a long time ago on this podcast as well. And so there is this balance between, like, super, super serious, super, super masculine, and just, like, a little silly.
Yeah, and I think that to have a cartoon like this, and if they played it entirely straight, I think everyone would be looking around being like, what the fuck is going on? Because that is G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe very much is like 95% serious, and then they throw in the PSA, and maybe there's two jokes in that, like, in an episode. This, there are jokes, joke after joke after joke, like people just negging on Skeletor being like, hey, you always fuck up. Like, the amount that, like, the amount that Skeletor's goons just, like, yell at him and are like, I can't believe I believed you had it this time. Like, I'm out of here. It's such a refreshing, fun thing because I can actually see a family watching an episode of this show in the 80s as opposed to, you know, it just being the kids where it's a ton of goof. And some of the jokes are over a child's head that I don't expect them to understand whatsoever. But Max, why is today different? We're not going to talk about every single plot point in this pilot, but I want to talk about the tool, the device that Skeletor has gotten his hands on, because we have the Diamond Ray of Disappearance. And buddy, what did you think when you saw this thing?
All right, kids, get ready to learn what a MacGuffin is. Yay! It is so silly to me that we just come out of the gate swinging with such a thick plot device of like, and I will beat He-Man today because I have a little tiny mysterious jewel box, and inside it is the greatest thing of all, but I cannot open the box, but here is the tiny box full of immense power. And even just the visual of what I assume is like a Paul Bunyan-sized man in Skeletor holding a ring box is so silly. The contrast of it is so goofy. The immense power of this thing is hilarious to me. It's just an absurd plot device. So we never really explain how he got it or what's the history of it. We don't need those things.
I think it is just, when you suspend your disbelief and then you also have to do the additional suspension of disbelief into, like, you're a child, right? It is one of those things where I was like, ooh, yes, we all, of course, know the Diamond Ray of Disappearance as was told to us in the legends of old.
There's a point later on in this episode where someone just goes, the lost diamond of disappearance, he must have found it. It's like, yeah, no shit, that's why we're here. That's why today is different.
I do want to give the commendation, though, right? Because, like, they tell us this thing, then they show us how it works, right? And then the animation that they decided to do for people disappearing, I thought was actually pretty fun.
They disappeared. It did the thing they said it was going to do.
It did it, and it did it in a fun, unique way. But I also thought it was so ballsy of, like, first episode of a TV show. You know what we're going to do? We're going to make these people that you just met disappear, and we hope that you, like, remember them and think that they're critical to the way that this works. Because
yeah, making most of your product line disappear in your first episode is a big move, and it's also the children's thing of they just disappear. This is not a death ray.
Yeah.
This is not a disintegration ray. This is, they're all okay. They're all alive. We're just taking them and putting them over here for a little bit with a clearly described set of rules to bring them all back.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I thought was interesting is we had all of this exposition at the top, right? And they give us our clear set of characters that we need to know. We talked about a few of them. And, like, then they do the villain exposition. But then there is a major fight scene in this pilot outside of Castle Grayskull, where they start introducing new like sidekicks to He-Man without ever naming them. And I'm like, who the fuck is that guy? Like, I felt so old pointing at the screen being like, what the fuck is that? Who is this guy? There's a guy who just like charges people with his forehead. Like, that's pretty cool. What's his name? Like, is it Forehead Charger? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, there's really an embarrassment of riches of toys they're trying to sell you in these fight sequences.
But Max, we sort of worked around it a little bit. There are two characters in this show that are so fucking goofy, and I'll let you pick which one you want to talk about first. But it is He-Man's pet tiger, and then Orko. Is that Orko? Is the
Orko.
Yeah. So I want to hear from you. Which one of these is giving you a little bit more of either ick or disdain, or making you just be like, "Why is this person here?"
All right, Orko, you know what you did. Saddle up, buddy. I don't understand the point of the floating wizard character. There's already an all-powerful sorceress that we've established in this as well. I don't really know what Orko contributes to He-Man's parents, the King and Queen of Eternia. He's working on magic tricks for most of this episode. And not well. I mean, he did get the rug pull on the egg trick quite nice, but then just absolutely beefed it on the execution at the end. I don't know what you do, buddy. I don't know what your purpose is in this castle. And if I was a kid who got an Orko toy, I'd be so pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk a little bit about Cringer, which is a wild name for a pet. If you're naming your pet Cringer, I have a lot of questions about you as a human being, who then transforms into Battle Cat. And the moment that Cringer spoke, I just was like, you know what? We don't need him to speak. We not all animals need the ability to speak. Some of them, it sort of proves the theory of like some people are like, hey, I don't want to know what my dogs are talking about or my pets are talking about. Because it's like, yeah, sometimes they're going to sound like Cringer and you're going to be like, oh, you're the worst. Like, you're the worst guy around.
Can Adam communicate with Cringer, or is that just an aside to the audience?
I think it is Adam communicates with Cringer in the world of Eternia. And then Battle Cat, that's the funniest part. Battle Cat is a mute. He does not speak. He does not do anything. He roars. And I love that Skeletor has his version of Battle Cat that has the same harness, but in a different color. So that when we're thinking about the toys, we're thinking about, oh, well, I have to have Skeletor and Panther so that I'm facing Battle Cat and He-Man.
And then you have to get the saddle accessory for Battle Cat as well. That's not included in the original box.
Oh, no, that's the additional like $3 or $5 that your parents have to spend that they really thought was included in the original toy bag. Well, Max, there is an end, right, to this pilot that we get in the traditional sense, which is that Prince Adam's parents absolutely despise their child. And he absolutely wrecks his dad's, like, I don't even know what they call it, but it's like, it's his dad's motorcycle, basically, but he just...
Hovercraft?
Yeah, some hovercraft shit. But what did you think of the PSA that we got at the end? Because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great message to give the kids.
I'm laughing so hard at just him coming out here and be like, yeah, you guys know some people like Skeletor. Don't be like that. And this whole thing about, like, don't trust cheaters. Hard work is the only way. Like, don't trust a scammer or people who think they have shortcuts to get ahead in life. It is such an odd morality play at the end. Like, it's so oddly specific that I couldn't help but chuckle. And I also love that there's multiple buttons on this, because we get the actual resolution to the plot.
Sure.
We get the all is lost moment and the resolution where He-Man saves the day. And then we get the button where it's back to him being Adam and being goofy in the view of his parents. And then we get a second button on top of that it's almost as absurd as some of the other shows of this type we've covered, where they just give you like a 5-minute preview of what's going to come next, and it's like the entire season. But yeah, double buttoning for a 5-year-old attention span is a big choice.
Yeah, I have an interesting question for you before we talk about things we loved or wait a minute moments. And we did actually get an in-flight question that I'm super excited to talk about. But the question that I have for you is, do you think that given that this is a pilot, given that there was this order for the series and all this stuff, that this first episode creates a universe that you think like, oh, like this could have hypothetically been a TV show before we got any of these characters or these figures, especially since it is a kids' television show?
So the thing that I feel when I watch this that makes it feel less like a fleshed out TV show and more of like we're putting the plane together while it's in the air is that Eternia and Snake Mountain really don't feel fleshed out at all to me. Like, there's nothing about those worlds that feels super specific. It just feels like they needed whatever the boys equivalent of the Barbie Dreamhouse is to put both sets of characters into. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, there's something there. I don't think it's fully fleshed out. I think that they were like, well, we have to, what's the geography of Eternia and where is, Snake Mountain versus Castle Grayskull, and then where's the kingdom and all that stuff. Like, I think it's a really interesting choice for a pilot to just be like, rather than show how He-Man was given the power of Castle Grayskull, let's just jump right in, and then maybe if we get more than a pilot, we'll go into that.
All three of those locations feel very close together, though.
Yeah, I think those are all within 5 blocks of each other. That's what I'm talking about.
There is a point where it's like Skeletor and his minions are on the prowl, and you could just see Eternia, and there's like almost a cut between the animation of Evil and the bright of Eternia. And I'm like, is it just across the street? Like, is it literally just over there? Because I can see both places right now.
This is the Starbucks looking at the other Starbucks across the street and pointing at each other. Like, this is comically close together. But Max, I want to ask you, since we've talked about the pilot, are there any things that you loved about this pilot that maybe you want to give a little bit more shine to?
Yes, I love that throughout the entire fight scene, there's a chorus just chanting He-Man, and they say it as many times as possible. That is, to me, the best way to skirt rules around how many commercials you can do for children on TV, like how limited you are to actually advertise to them, by just saying the name of the character over and over and over again while they're watching that show. If you leave here with one thing in mind, it's that you need to ask your parents to buy you He-Man, because there is a voice that's been chanting He-Man for the last 15 minutes that is burrowed so deeply into your brain now that it is the only thing you could conceivably think about.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, I think that I hate that we're, you know, praising advertising without advertising during a children's show, but like, boy, are some of these character names really, really easy to remember. Like Evil-Lyn, I put in my notes that this is just the names of all these characters are rejected RuPaul Drag Race names. Like, it is truly insane, but I remember all of them and I'm like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, that's the point. You want the kid to remember exactly what character they want their parents to buy at Toys R Us next time they are there. But let's talk about wait a minute moments. And I have one that, like, I was laughing hysterically at this moment. But, like, there's a moment where Sorceress is supposedly speaking telepathically to someone. And rather than doing a voiceover of this with the voiceover of the actress saying it, they're just like, no, silence. We can't have someone speak if they don't have a mouth. Meanwhile, Cringer can speak.
We did not have the budget to animate that Falcon's mouth moving.
Yeah, no, exactly. I didn't even want the mouth to move. I just wanted a disembodied voice in that moment. But I'm curious about you. Were there any wait a minute moments that you would like to speak on?
I mean, just the fact that the only time we explain Castle Grayskull and Prince Adam is that it gave him powers, like, that's the extent of the line.
Could you imagine if your apartment gave you powers that you weren't aware of?
I'm not saying I need this to be a traditional pilot where we show him getting the powers. Like, that is, it's overdone, it's overkill. I even like that in superhero movies, we're kind of just moving into, they have the powers now. Mm-hmm. Like, we did that with the last Superman. We've kind of done that with some of the newer Spider-Man stuff. It's like, this is just the world. They have the powers. Moving on. But we had nothing beyond
yeah.
gave him powers. And to me, looking at the whole package here, beyond just the toy ad, I'm like, I need a little bit more lore. Like, I need a little more something to sink my teeth into.
Yeah, like, my house gave me constant anxiety. That is my superpower. But, Max, we do have an in-flight question.
Oh,
our in-flight question this week comes from James in Washington, D.C. And James asked very simply, James must have known the history of the show before you said it, because James said this show was actually based, if you did not know, on the toys rather than on original IP. And he's curious if there is a TV show that you'd like to have based off of a toy that already exists before the IP. So think about all of the toys. Think about board games. Think about things that exist potentially before the TV show was ever made. What are you building?
Oh, man, I need the entire creative team of the Pit to make Operation.
Oh, my God. That would be so good.
I need the world's most serious prestige medical drama where we're taking out funny bones and little tickers and all sorts of things complete with sound effects. I need the silliest, goofiest prestige medical version of that game.
Yeah, I think that you have the right idea with board games leading into television, right? Because most recently on Dropout, they just did a version of Don't Wake Daddy, but with the FCC that was amazing, with giant sized FCC lawyer popping up at certain points. Absolutely amazing. But mine is going to be Codenames. I think that there's a really good opportunity there for something really fun. And we've seen the spies genre do really well on TV. There's not much that exists right now as far as that spy, getting that spy demo. But yeah, I'd have a lot of fun with that. And James, thanks for that in-flight question.
You know what's insane about this entire episode, doing this in-flight question, everything we've talked about, is we make it sound like this was the craziest idea in the world of, you know, Mattel had this toy line they needed to promote and some rules change, so they made a TV show out of it, and that's everything now. Like, how much do, I mean, it was 40 years ago, granted,
yeah.
But how much does, like, time fly that we live in a world where every single board game in existence is now getting an adaptation and has a deal? How many dolls are out there? We had the Oscar nominated Barbie film and the slightly less Oscar nominated Battleship film. Like, everything that felt like it was breaking the rules, and can you legally do that with He-Man, is now every single thing that gets produced.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does make you sit, pause, and think a little bit. But, you know, we could go into diatribes about how original movies and non-IP-based things are actually doing really, really well right now. And there seems to be attention and noise for those more so than the IP-based things, especially at the box office as we speak. But we are a TV-based show, and I do, like, sort of sit here just thinking, like, yeah, you mentioned the idea of a board game. I mentioned a board game. We've seen those turned into movies. Like, it is a little bit insane.
Just imagine the butterfly effect if the people at Mattel thought that Star Wars was going to be even a modest hit and agreed to do toys.
Yeah, I would be very, very intrigued into seeing what sort of world we'd live in today. But if you have a in-flight question like James and you'd like to submit those, you can shoot us a text message or leave us a voicemail at 213-290-1713. And you can also go to tvpilotslicense.com to submit those on our Google form. But before we talk a little bit about the history of the show, just one more word from our sponsor. Well, Max, let's talk about the history of this show. This show had two seasons. And how many episodes do you think children's animated TV shows can have in two seasons?
Oh, God. Syndication. There's 365 days in a year. I'm going to say two seasons, 180 episodes.
You were pretty close. It was 130, 65 episodes per. But there were also four other versions of this show and 165 more episodes between 1985 and today. There, that's not even mentioning She-Ra, which is He-Man's sister, or He-Man's twin sister. That has another 145 episodes. And then we also have all the other things that have come out that I'll speak about in a little bit. But yeah, given Max's intro, I don't think anyone would be surprised that, like, as soon as this show came out, they put out VHSs for this series. There were also two separate releases of DVDs. There was one in 2005 and 2006, and then there was a remastered version in 2011.
Oh, He-Man and the Remasters of the Universe?
Yeah. But here's the funny part. Max, this pilot that we watched actually was missing a minute of footage from the original pilot scene on TV that had to deal with Orko, your favorite character in the world, and him actually being the one that warns He-Man about the Ray of Disappearance. There are Christmas specials and animated specials, live action movies. There is also a Filipino parody movie called He-Man Master of None. There also was the appearance of Skeletor in Chippendale's Rescue Rangers that came out a few years ago, if you did not see that. And there's so much merchandise. And Max, I was saying before that I had a couple pieces of trivia. Before I dive into those, I wanted to let you know that in the 90s, Mattel was like, oh, we need the new toy. What is it? And so they came out that He-Man had a son named He-Ro. And there was going to be an entire series based off of He-Ro and him taking on the mantle as He-Man. But then no studio wanted to pick it up. So they just were like, we're going to make the biographies and everything and try to do the same damn thing over again. But Max, as far as collectors go, Mattel CEOs have said that there were three major collector groups for He-Man toys. Would you like to try to take a guess at the demos that most likely collect these toys?
Oh, goodness. I mean, like, how specific do you want me to go?
Think about general interest groups.
Nerds is my first guess. Am I right? Is nerds one?
No. So I'm going to go from the most obvious to the least obvious. The first is the LGBTQ plus community, huge collectors of this, especially. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. The second is bodybuilders. Supposedly bodybuilders were wild about He-Man merch, including wearing it at the gym and collecting all the figurines. And then the third is cops. They specifically saw a large amount of purchasing.
They ignored all of the PSAs and only heard I have the power.
Exactly. I do want to give a shout out to the voice, the original voice of He-Man, that was John Irwin, who was did a lot of the movies, did a lot of the animation, but he was even in a Family Guy episode before his death as Prince Adam. But there were a lot of famous people who have portrayed the voice or the likeness of He-Man. That includes John Irwin, Dolph Lundgren, Macaulay Culkin, Alan Oppenheimer, Seth Green, and in theaters now, Nicholas Galitzine. Finally, I mentioned Happy Pride at the beginning of this episode, and I would be remiss if I did not talk about He-Man as a gay icon. This is not just me being like, oh, let's put meaning onto something, but there are a lot of very subtle things and not so subtle things about this pilot that you might be thinking, a man living a double life, there being leather, bondage, and everything in between. There are much smarter people than I who have talked about this in depth, including in the Johns Hopkins Journal, which I highly recommend reading that article. There was a super interesting point that was made by Anthony Gramigula, That is a hell of a name, Anthony, but I'm one to talk. And he talked about the idea of one of the reasons why the queer community really identified with the show was the idea of struggling with that double identity, which, you know, absolutely makes sense at the times. And Skeletor actually being a really good representation of the AIDS crisis that was outside of children, LGBTQ plus community really went to the show and saw it as their representation because there wasn't much gay media on television at this time. And that's awesome. And not to mention She-Ra was seen is a queer icon as well. So it runs in the family. And one of the things that I found really cool was that the CEO of Mattel had been asked about the idea of He-Man being a queer icon and was fully like, we are aware of it, we embrace it, and we embrace the queer community, which is fucking awesome. Not all people can say that about their IP that they love. But Max, that is the history of this show. And before we take this plane to a land, I have two questions for you. And the first is, based off of the pilot and the pilot alone, are you returning to Eternia and going to have some fun with He-Man? And then the second question is the idea of toys being turned into movies or into TV shows, right? Like, we've seen it already. There is Oscar-nominated stuff that has to do with toys before they were turned into that media. But more so, do you think that there should be that, or should we be focusing more on original IP for television?
So with your first question, even trying to put myself into my childhood shoes, this is a no for me. I just don't think I really got enough like story or anything out of it. It's frankly a baffling cartoon series, and I will just let this 30-minute advertisement lay as a piece of 80s media. For your second question, I think that the rush of stuff post-Barbie feels a little overwhelming because of how long it takes to get something into development. It feels like every day we're hearing about a new children's toy, a new board game. Like, oh my god, did you hear they're doing a 9-part limited series on Bop It? And that can be exhausting. However, if you are also finding ways to take something that has to do with it, putting it into an original direction, finding something to come out of it, and just using it as a base. Like, this is our jumping off point, and we found all these places to go. I have been proven wrong time and time again by things like the Dungeons & Dragons feature, or I even remember like seeing multiple trailers for Barbie, and there was a point where I was like, oh, I get what they're doing with this. And becoming so excited to see that in theaters and having one of the best in-theater experiences I've had in the last decade in that movie. So I'm always on the side of caution, but if you can prove to me that you have a take on it, I will absolutely give you a chance if you want to keep cranking out these projects.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, very similar sort of mindset. I have to put myself in the mind of a child, and then I'm looking at what else children have.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard.
And I'm like, man, have you ever watched Bluey? That thing fucking rocks. Like, what a good show. And you're competing directly with this. Like, Yeah, I'm going to watch Bluey each time. But that's not to say that there are things that I did really like about this show. I thought it was funny. I thought there was comedic timing and the goofiness of it. If you love Goofy, then holy shit, are you going to love this. And if you want to find it, just to mention it, we found it both on Amazon Prime, which you can see the entire 130 episodes of it on. As far as television being based off of IP, yes, if it has a purpose, if that makes sense. I think that is, you would not disagree with me if I was like, I want TV with purpose behind it rather than just putting out advertisements that happen to be 22 minutes with additional advertisements or 42 minutes with additional advertisements. And there are great things that are coming out. Like, I'm really excited about the Green Lantern series that is coming out that they've said is just going to be a detective series. And it's like, cool. If it happens to be that there's some DC characters that I really enjoy that happen to be in that, then I'm going to watch it and I'm going to have a really fun time as well.
Did you ever see the most recent animated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Like the cool, like hand-drawn looking one?
No, I did not, but I bet.
Rules. Yeah. It's so fun. It's so pretty. It's such a clever take. Script is super funny. And like, that's another one where it's like, I don't like the Michael Bay things, but like, I didn't give this one a chance. I saw it eventually and I loved it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I also want to make sure that, like, if you're listening to this and you're like, I can't believe they don't want to watch it, I do have to give this show the respect it deserves because it made shows of my childhood possible, like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like some of the Transformers animated series that went on. Like, those were all possible because of this. If you like Pokemon, brother, let me tell you, that card game was invented before they came out with the TV show. So if you are walking around saying that your favorite Pokemon is Pikachu or one of the many others that exist, I have forgotten all of them, then you have to thank this TV show and this series for making any of that possible. Well, Max, that is our episode. But before we go, I want to make sure that folks can find you wherever you want to be found. So where can folks find you?
You can find me at Snake Mountain Jeff and on all things social media at Maxwell Singh.
And you can find me also trying to figure out how do I get that haircut quite like Prince Adam so I can be the third person in Eternia with it. But if you're looking for me on social media, you can find me at Run Jeff Run. If you're looking for the TV Pilot's License, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also see our smiling faces on YouTube and check us out wherever you like to get your media. If you have an in-flight question, maybe a episode recommendation for the show, you can also shoot those to tvpilotslicense.com. You can leave us you can leave us a voicemail or a text message at 213-290-1713. Make sure to watch out for some of the fun stuff that we have coming up, including next week's episode where we dive into the world of Ted Lasso to get ready for the World Cup with a very familiar face. But with the plane landed and the seatbelt signs off, we look forward to flying the bright skies of the TV world with you again soon. Until next time, keep your eyes on the skies and your fingers on the dial.